Welcome to the Health Fix Podcast, where health junkies get their weekly fix of tips, tools, and techniques to have limitless energy, sharp minds, and fit physiques for life. Hey, health junkies. On this episode of the Health Fix Podcast, I'm interviewing Ashley Wynn Grimes. She is a nurse and the founder of Cannabis Nursing Solutions. She's the author of a book called Stigmatized and the children's book, ASA's Medicine. Now, Ashley has an interesting story in terms of how she came to work with cannabis. And it really stems from her husband's back pain, but also from her wanting to help her patients out with something that could really make a profound difference that didn't involve pharmaceutical medicines. And so she's dedicated to empowering patients and nursing professionals to make informed choices around cannabis. And in particular, she has really done her homework. She's actually the medical director for 5 dispensaries in Maryland, and she really cares about the quality of the cannabis, but also how one is using it. And what she's kind of thought, much like me, is that unfortunately, you walk into a cannabis dispensary and it's all about the experience, the high, all these things. And unfortunately, we're missing the boat when it comes to the benefits of the endocannabinoid system on our health and how we can use it to our benefit to feel better without the high. So Ashley and I go into detail about the endocannabinoid system in this one, but we also talk candidly about finding someone that can help you. And the reason I really wanted to bring her on is because I find it highly important to find someone that can guide you, not just someone that'll give you a card in 10 minutes, someone that can guide you in the use of cannabis to actually get you results. Because the endocannabinoid system is very synonymous with your vagus nerve, your fight or flight nervous system. And unfortunately, we have the stigma that if you use cannabis, you are a druggie. You're going to become addicted to all kinds of things. It's a gateway drug. And really, the reality is that it can be extremely useful and you don't have to be all about the high, the THC. Now, I've also found that CBD alone isn't necessarily 100% beneficial for folks. Sometimes we need some THC. And this is where nursing professionals like Ashley, where doctors like myself who have been trained, can help you with finding the right formula for yourself versus going into a dispensary and just kind of picking and choosing what's there. So I want you guys to be open-minded going into this podcast, thinking about how cannabis is an herb. It's herbal medicine, much like a lot of the medicines out there. It has constituents, so components to it, that are similar to lavender, other herbal things like essential oils, things that are in those. So I want you to think of it more as the herbal medicine in it versus the high in it, and be open to thinking that, you know what? It is possible that we can use this medicine responsibly to help out with one of the most common issues out there, anxiety, mental health stuff. It's crazy. And also, I guess the second most common is gut issues, because your brain really lives in your gut. That's your first brain, and your brain is your second brain. So anyway, let's introduce you to Ashley Wynn Grimes. Hey there, health junkies. Welcome to another episode of The Health Fix. I have Ashley Wynn Grimes on, and we're going to be talking about something I haven't talked a lot about on the podcast. We're going to be talking a little bit about cannabis, but we're also going to be talking about nurses, because she is a nurse. She is she's been in the game a long time. Let's put it that way. She's a veteran. And so in that case, you know, she's got a lot of street cred. So we're going to be talking nurses help, nurses, give a nurse a hug kind of thing today. But we're also going to be talking a lot about how we can really help promote the cannabis concept with children, but also adults. So Ashley, welcome to Health Fix Podcast.
Hey, thank you for having me.
So of course we got to just jump right in and be like, goodness, you've been a nurse for a while. What was your first gig? What was your first nursing job right out the gate?
Med-surg. I got stuck in that trap. They said, as soon as you graduate, you should go into med surg because that's what nurses do, so they can get all the skills, and that's what you do. So that's what I did.
Man,
And likely in that time, you saw a lot of people who were quite sick, didn't have a lot of, you know, resources other than pharmaceutical meds. And then, of course, surgery was that end point. Is that what got you starting to think about cannabis patient care, or did it come a little bit later on in your career?
A lot later on, actually. So I've been a nurse for 14 years and I did all the traditional things. I was totally against like cannabis. It was definitely your gateway drug. It was your brain on drugs, you know, everything that was preached to me in, you know, marketing and advertisement. And as I started working through my career, for me, I was very goal oriented. So it was, how do I become a charge nurse? How do I become a preceptor? Okay, well, this isn't satisfying me. Let me get my master's degree in nursing education. Okay, that didn't really take me where I want to go. All right, well, let me get this leadership gig. All right, well, that was fun, but no, not for me. And then, oh, wow, I'm in corporate for a 14 hospital system. Made the six-figure goal. Wow, yay. And what happened was life kind of put the brakes on me, so to speak. And I was the victim of cyber theft. And I was dealing with a lot of like just personal, like mental health struggle, trying to balance this high demand position where, you know, it was very financially driven, goal oriented in that way. And then when I had the cyber theft, I wasn't quote unquote able to perform the way that I had been previously. So I was given an ultimatum to either take a job that was half my position or to be slowly walked out of the job by taking a performance improvement plan. And so during that time for me, you know, no offense to my doctor friends, but I don't want to go see a doctor as a nurse. Like I see enough of y'all. And so I was trying to find different ways to, you know, make things better. Like I knew something needed to be fixed, but I also didn't feel like I needed pharmaceuticals. I also didn't feel like I needed necessarily a diagnosis. I did employ a therapist. And we worked through that time together. She put me out on FMLA because she realized I was suffering from severe insomnia. And as I was going through all of these things, I started just kind of researching alternative holistic options. And so the first thing I actually came across was yoga. And wow, like I was like, I have hips. Who'd have thunk?
Oh my goodness. Oh yeah, that's a huge realization when you're like, wow, I have hips and boy are they tight.
Woo. Yeah. Yeah. Seriously. I was like, and I can't move them. What's going on here?
Oh yes. Yes. Wow. And so you got in there, you started doing that. And what else did yoga lead you to discovering? How were those shoulders of yours?
Well, I didn't struggle with the shoulders, but I definitely had issues with balance, you know, like posture, you know, sitting in front of a computer definitely played its toll on me, you know, and just bringing awareness just to my mind and my body in space. Because again, I was very, very goal oriented for the first 10, 12 years of my career. So that was the only focus. Let alone paying attention to my poop patterns, right? Like we talk to patients all the time and yeah. I'm like, I don't even know my poop pattern. Like what am I doing? What is happening? What type of life am I living here? And I know it sounds real crazy, but like for me, it was more about the realization that my body had more to offer me and I wasn't giving it the time and attention that it needed. Because I thought adulthood, I thought that life was go to work, make your money, get your house, you know, get married, all those things. That's what I thought that life was. And I never took into consideration that it also included the care of my body and what the potential that it had.
Yeah. Yeah. Isn't that crazy that we can be in the healthcare field? Even myself, like I was trained as a naturopathic doctor. Yeah. We were told certain things, you know, that were a little bit different than the conventional realm, but you get in the thick of it and you become part of the system just the same as it is. It's so crazy. Oh my gosh. It's wild. Yeah. Isn't
it? And it's disheartening. And it almost, for me, I felt kind of angry. So it was probably an extension of the cyber theft, but I felt very angry that, you know, I had been in the health and wellness space for so long, and I had no idea that, you know, and I guess I'll talk about the endocannabinoid system. I had no idea my body had an endocannabinoid system. Like, I didn't know that existed. So how do I go through all of this rigorous training and almost traumatized through this training, right? To find out that y'all half-assed the train. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to
cuss. You can swear.
Okay. But y'all didn't tell me everything. You only told me some things that y'all wanted me to know. So it was, you know, it was a huge realization during that time. And it pretty much shifted the direction that I did everything. So, you know, then I became interested in entrepreneurship. You know, I took that job that was half my salary. And my boss at that time, she was very compassionate to what I had went through in my previous role, because I was very, very closed in. And most employers, if you come in and you're not a team player, quote unquote, you're not considered to be a good employee. And she was very compassionate in that I did my work. And she couldn't ask me to, like, have, you know, chit chat conversation, because I just wasn't in a space to do it. And so during that time, you know, I did all the research on cannabis, cannabinoid medicine. I built the training course that still exists today, which was a side hustle. Like, you know, hey, y'all, I want to tell y'all about this medicine. Did y'all know there's an endocannabinoid system? And, you know, that's kind of what took me down this journey.
Wow. Wow. I mean, I got to give it to you, because you to go down this, you know, against the let's put it this way, the standard of everything, you know, because I too was kind of brainwashed in the whole, like, it's a gateway drug, you know, oh, you start doing the weed, you're going to, you know, go all into heroin and next thing's fentanyl, you know, it's just like, it's all over for you. Yeah. And you and I have a similar story with the insomnia. It took me till I had 2 years of struggling with not sleeping till I was like, okay, I'm trying this cannabis stuff to see, you know, if it will work for me. And sure enough, it yeah. did. I would love to hear a little bit about how you started to work with cannabis and how you started to integrate it to help you with sleep. Because I think a lot of people, let's put it this way, think about it, but what they envision is all of the flash that you go into the dispensaries and you see these like fancy gummies and you can get your cookie this one and your gummy that one. Let's talk about reality in terms of med dosing and things of that nature. How did you start dosing yourself? What did you work with after you researched?
So I actually started with my husband. So he was actually my first patient, and he suffered from severe back pain. So another issue during that time was that he was out of work, and because he I don't even remember now, but it was something happened that hurt his back and he had to get out of work. He was a diesel mechanic, and so we were like, and he was already a consumer, and I was like, okay, like, I know all this stuff, let's work with me. He was resistant. He's like, nah, I got this. And I'm like, No, seriously, let's work on this. Let's do a 48-hour cleanse. Let's like start from scratch. Let's try all the methods of consumption. Let's microdose you up into a therapeutic dose. Let's do all of those things. He was not very open to edibles at that time. He is still a smoker and prefers that method. But just bringing awareness to like all the different ways you can. So you can consume it. So here's the thing. Each method of consumption has a different onset and duration time, and has and it affects how it interacts in the body. So smoking has a very short onset and duration time. So for more acute issues throughout the day, like if you're going to vape or if you're going to smoke and you're suffering from like an acute flare up of some sort of pain, that would be a good option, right? But to manage it, similar to how we do Oxycontin and oxycodone, you do the long term versus the short term. So a longer term option could be a transdermal, it could be a edible, it could be a suppository, and they stay in the body like the max amount of time, 12 hours. And so being aware of the onset and duration time is really important. for being able to determine what method works best. So for sleep, for example, I would most likely tell a person to try an edible because it stays in your body for 8 to 12 hours and you'll most likely get the most about a sleep throughout the night. Mm-hmm. The other thing to think about is the cannabinoid and terpene profiles that also plays a part in it. So cannabinoids are, everybody's familiar with THC, the thing that's gonna, you know, get you on fentanyl.
get you high. Yep.
Right. But then alternatively, everybody loves CBD, right? And so they're both cannabinoids found in the cannabis sativa plant. But there are also over 100 other cannabinoids. Some of them we know a lot about, some of them we don't know as much about. But ultimately, all of those cannabinoids play a part in how they affect the body. So when it comes to pain, generally, we want equal parts CBD and THC. And, you know, most people get decent relief from that. So if it's 2 milligrams of THC, it would also be 2 milligrams of CBD. They do have products that, you know, have them combined, but then certain states don't have access to a wider range of products. So sometimes you have to kind of makeshift your own, you know, dosage. What else? And then the terpenes also play a part in it. I personally think that that's probably the biggest impact. Like it's most telling of how it'll affect your body. So sleep example, linalool is a terpene found in the plant, is also found in lavender, right? Mm-hmm. And so that linalool is a relaxant. It helps you calm down. It helps you, you know, feel relaxed, right? And so any product that has linalool in it most likely will help you sleep. And so being able to identify the profile of the plant and be like proactive about how you choose what products you're gonna use is key to it. Is key to it all. And so for most patients, they just walk in and they see all the edibles and they look tasty and, you know, all these things. And, you know, it's unfortunate because there are a lot of patients who will not, like, they won't move forward because they're not getting the results that they need. And it's not one of those things where if you take it today, you'll get the results tomorrow. No, it's a process. Like, you have to find what works best for your body. And having at least a basic understanding of the endocannabinoid system will kind of help you to understand why that's so.
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense. Because I think for a lot of people, you know, our default is we know the CBD. And a lot of people will like dose themselves super high on CBD and be like, it doesn't work at all. And so it's one of those things to understand that the THC, and this is kind of that entourage effect that I think a lot of people understand, but also figure that if they just don't want to get high. And this is where professionals like you come in to kind of help folks to go, okay, what can we do to get you the effect you need, but not have this complete stoned out, you know, what we see in the movies kind of effect going on. So say someone's listening to this right now and they're like, Ashley, I know nothing about the endocannabinoid system at all. What would we tell them? You know, I would say, let's give them basics, but also like resources that you can direct them to that you have, or perhaps other things that you would do in terms of getting just basic getting started.
Yeah, so I don't have any specific resources off the top of my head, but I would do, there's a lot of studies out now. Mm-hmm. What is it called? The med journal, like just typical medical journals. So I would just start by typing in the endocannabinoid system. I always tell patients to, when they're engaging with doctors or healthcare professionals about it, and they may be getting some resistance, just tell your professional, your healthcare professional, look up the endocannabinoid system and any research that's available to them on their med journals. Mm-hmm. But generally, the endocannabinoid system is a neuroreceptor system. So you have your receptor pockets, and then you have the cannabinoids that bind to it. Our bodies make its own cannabinoids that bind to this system. Most people's endocannabinoid system is, you know, functioning, and the sole purpose is to achieve homeostasis. So it's the master regulator of all other systems in the body. If that's out of whack, other areas of your body will be out of whack. So for example, sleep, your gastrointestinal system, you know, other areas in the body. Mm-hmm. And so what the cannabis plant does is pretty much like replace or add cannabinoids, introduces outside cannabinoids into the body to bind to that receptor system. And so for people who are suffering from some sort of chronic condition with specific symptoms and things of that nature, that's why we see relief, because essentially those cannabinoids are binding to the system and it's facilitating homeostasis or helping to achieve the best version of homeostasis. I will say this too. There are other ways to optimize the endocannabinoid system. So it doesn't have to necessarily be external cannabinoids. We can jumpstart the internal cannabinoids if for whatever reason they are deficient. And we can do that through different foods. There are terpenes in food sources. There are terpenes in certain smells that we see regularly, like oils and all of that, like linalool, lavender, those go together. And exercise is a huge thing. Meditation, huge thing. Acupuncture, all of those things that we see in holistic medicine also support the endocannabinoid system.
You know what? That was the best explanation I've heard in a very long time. Simple, easy to understand. Thank you. Thank you. So I think a lot of people right now are like, okay, all right, I get it. And I've even had patients come in to me. I have one fella, I love him to death. He comes in and tells me I have a deficiency of the endocannabinoid system. I need more cannabinoids. And of course I laugh because, you know, it's true. And really folks, what she's getting at here is this is all stress. This is life. Life depletes our endocannabinoid system. And in particular, you know, our ability to get these cannabinoids working like they should within the body. And so vagus nerve. You know, and I talk a ton vagus nerve, and I'm sure you talk a lot about that with folks too. What can we do to chill that vagus nerve out?
Breathe.
That's good. Yep.
I think to be honest with you, I feel like, I won't say it like that. I feel like most people do not breathe.
Yeah. It's true.
Like the amount of time we spend, like even having conversation like this, like taking intentional breath is something that could help support your overall health and wellness, right? I think even in yoga, breath work is a huge component of it, right? So if I had to say anything, it would just be take some time to breathe and do it 2, 3, 4, 10, 20 times a day, right? And I think that people will see over time a big difference in just how they feel about themselves, more refreshed, a little less stressed, right? Because it brings attention back into your body. Because remember, I started off talking about my own journey, and really this journey started with awareness of self. Mm-hmm. And so how can you bring awareness back to yourself is the first step. And I think the key to that is breathing.
Yeah. Hands down. Breathing is so huge. And it's funny because let's put it this way. The healthcare model doesn't set us up for breathing. We're running from one thing to the next, And this is why I find, you know, I have so many nurses in my practice, and a lot of them will come after their shifts for acupuncture. And literally they're like, I'm just here for my nap. Let's put the needles in, shut the door, come back in an hour, I'm good. And that's, you know, what makes me sad, because we're modeling, you know, in terms of what's happening in the medical system here today, we're modeling a sick care system. Mm-hmm. We're not even taking care of ourselves. And so for you to bring this up with the breathing and really working on helping folks to understand the endocannabinoid system, and that it's not all just about getting high, it's about really serving a deficiency that our system has. This is good stuff. So tell us a little bit about, you know, what your program a little bit. I know you said it's still out there today, but I know that you're also kind of working with nurses and helping nurses kind of understand the system and educating that way. What can some folks be looking at in terms of, okay, I know that I need to work on finding that right ratio of balance. What would they start with? Like you said, different types of methods. So the smoking versus the transdermal versus suppository. How would it be best for them to go into a dispensary and find one of the medicals? I don't know what they're called, but there's someone on there that deals with the medical cards. Do you know what those people are called?
So it's different in every state.
Okay.
Most states have, when you go to the dispensary, there's a budtender, the person at the counter. Generally, yeah, somebody who just really loves weed, and that's there.
Yep, they're going to get you what you want in terms of the tasty and the experience.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And some are more aware of providing information outside of themselves, right? Because a lot of times they'll be like, well, I had this experience, take this. And if you're coming for a specific medical purpose, that really won't work for you, because it's like, yeah, you had a great experience doing that, but I'm just really trying to relieve my pain, right? So it's just not a difference. Some dispensaries or some states require what they call clinical directors on mm-hmm. site. And so that would be a medical professional in the dispensary working for the dispensary to provide guidance and from that more medical point of view. And then the person who provides you the certification will be somebody like yourself, a doctor, nurse practitioner, something along those lines, where essentially they would do your assessment. They would document whether or not you have specific symptoms that would qualify you to get a medical card. And that person, that the quality of that experience ranges as well. So you could have an experience where you get on a Zoom call and you say, I can't sleep. And they'd be like, all right, here's your card. Or it can be a robust experience where you say, I can't sleep. And they actually do some true assessment and get to the source of it and provide you with some education. So that way you're prepared to go into the dispensary and have that conversation with the budtender or the clinical director.
Yes, that's what I was wondering about. Because in my, I mean, I live in Wisconsin, but I practice out of Washington State when I'm there. And for me, I am that person. I will be like, okay, this is what you need to do when you go see the bud tenders. You know, don't let them talk you into this experience, because you might find yourself head deep in some hot Cheetos and you don't know why. And then you know, it goes south. I mean, not that that's ever happened to me. It has, while experimenting. That's what happened. I'm here for you guys. I've experimented. But the other thing is, though, is really, you know, like you said, it varies per state. And I think this is really important for folks to hear. Now, are you still in Maryland these days?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So what's it like in Maryland? What happens in Maryland for folks?
So in Maryland, we have the certifier. And I think there are a few that I've met that give that robust experience I was describing. But for the most part, it's kind of turned into like a mill, almost like an assembly line set up for those really big ones that I've seen out there. Come get your card, 10 minutes in, 10 minutes out. When you go to the dispensaries, I've met some really, really good quality dispensaries that really cherish the medical component of it, you know, really support it. And then I've gone to other dispensaries where they're like, yeah, all we got is this one tincture and all this flower here. And they're like 50% THC. And you're like, oh, wow. Okay. So that happens. But Maryland did require that all dispensaries have what's called a clinical director. And those clinical directors are supposed to be accessible throughout the day. So if a patient comes in and has a question, they should be able to access and reach that clinical director to help support their journey, their products, you know, ask for some most symptom, help with symptomatology. So that's what the model looks like today. I think for me, just from a healthcare perspective, I'm losing my words now, but a healthcare perspective, like I really do appreciate a solid process and consistency for the patient experience. And so I think that's where the deficit is here, is that the experience ranges and varies depending on what doctor you go to, what dispensary you go to, what clinical director you see. What budtender you happen to meet that day. And, you know, and there's a lot of different information going out there and it's not consistent. And so, and I will say this too, I don't believe that most people in the cannabis industry as it is today see the more like outside of the flower, right? They don't really see the other aspects of it. They're not really looking at it from the whole person perspective. And so I am totally anti, let's fix a human mm-hmm. and let's help a human achieve the highest version of wellness. And I don't see that as much in healthcare, and I don't see that in cannabis.
That it's unfortunate, but yes, I mean, you walk into any of them, I mean, it's all about the high, sadly. Yeah. And it does make me sad. And this is why I think a lot of people, we still have that stigmatism around this, because I think a lot of people aren't aware that there are doctors who are trained specifically and have taken courses, much like, and nurses who have taken courses much like your own, that really do understand this. Now, do you have a website that has a list of folks who have taken your training, or how can folks find out, you know, who's been trained versus who hasn't been trained? Do you have a resource for that?
Well, because there's no true certification out there, it's no real qualification. So there are people who have taken my training course specifically. And I'll say this too, there's a lot of people who have taken my training course and didn't do anything with the information. Yeah. They didn't get, you know, like the stigma was just too much for them to bear as well. So they are knowledgeable, but they don't let people know that they're knowledgeable. So that's an unfortunate thing. And then I've seen in other areas where people are, in general, there are a lot of nurses out here that have a lot of information that are doing this thing, but have just been overwhelmed with the aspect of doing something independent of a hospital, doing something independent of what we're familiar with. And so while I'd like to say there are at least a few hundred people across the U.S. nurses-wise that are skilled and understand this plant, I would like to say maybe half of them are actually practicing and working within the space to help support patients that way.
Yeah. No, it's still there. It's absolutely, that stigmatism is still there, and which is great why that you have this book called Stigmatize. And you know, guys, we'll get into the book in a second. Before we go there, I do want to talk a little bit about the children's book and the children's aspect of things, because it's really important, because a lot of parents, I mean, we've heard stories of parents driving, you know, across state lines to get their kids Charlotte's Web. I think that was kind of like a big one for years. So tell us a little bit about how you went into working with children's medicine, with the endocannabinoid system, and how you got here today with your book.
Yeah. So I don't actually work with children. That is the thing that I can tell you a story about it, but pediatrics is just never my thing. So what actually happened was we passed a bill here in Maryland that allows children access to cannabis in schools. Hi. And it was advocated for a young boy that I actually got to know very well. And they were the one that got that bill passed, because he was one of those children who couldn't access his medicine in school. He was able to change his whole entire life behind the cannabis. I think he started, I might be saying it wrong, but maybe around 12 or so. And he was due for like surgery, and like he had a PEG tube and just terrible quality of life, couldn't eat, all of this. And he started using cannabis, changed his life. He could then eat. The PEG tube came out, all of this. So here he is. Now he's ready to go to school like every other child. And instead of him going through the school day like another child who might be asthmatic, his parents would have to get off work, come pick him up, take him off school grounds, drive off the drug-free zone, give him 2 drops, drive him back, send him back to school. And it was like hugely disruptive to his school day. So when the bill passed, I was asked to be on a guidelines committee that helped kind of build out the structure by which the schools had to implement their policy. And while I was working on the guidelines, I just, you know, it's a well-written document, very robust. There was a lot of people involved with it. But for me, I kept wondering about the end user, like the kid who comes to school and might feel stigmatized, the kid who in his home or her home feels that cannabis is normalized, because you know how kids are. You're like you tell them this is normal, this is okay, this is your medicine, you go to school, you yell it to the rooftops, and now some other kid is like, well, my mom told me that cannabis is bad, right? And so what does that look like for this child? And then knowing that teachers aren't informed and educated, knowing that most nurses aren't informed and educated when they should be advocates for the child when they do run into those type of situations. So the book actually kind of walks through in my mind what it should look like when something like that happens and occurs for children who happen to be a cannabis patient.
Okay. I mean, huge stuff there just in general, just starting the conversation around it, because I think for a lot of schools and a lot of teachers too, I mean, it's the same thing. I think anybody that's living today has had some sort of concept of the stigmatism in one way or other, just based on programming, like you said, our programming from growing up, family members, whatever's happened. Now, I do want to be able to say the book properly. Is it ASA's Medicine?
You said it right. Most people don't say it right.
Yes. Yeah, I've seen a couple. I've had a couple kiddos come through my practice over the years that have had the same name. So that's my only luck right there. I think just for some reason it was a popular name in Washington. So okay, ASA's Medicine, guys. That's her children's book that she has there. Now, of course, folks are probably wondering, like, Ashley, how do we get in touch with you? How do we find you? How do we get some information from you? So let's share with folks. We've got your book, Stigmatized, but we also have ASA's Medicine. What else can folks do to connect with you?
They can come follow me on Instagram, Cannabis Nursing Solutions, or you can come to my website. I hear that's outdated. Like, people don't actually like websites anymore.
I think it's half and half. I think they check you out on Instagram. They want to see, you know, what she's up to. And then if they like it, I think they pop over eventually. And if they're our age, I think when you're a little bit, you know, 30 plus, you still kind of gravitate towards it. I don't know.
All right. Well, I got it. It's there, available. It's www.cannabisnursingsolutions.com.
All right. Perfect. Well, Ashley, thank you so much for coming on, telling us a little bit about your story, but also really helping promote the safe use of cannabis, the medical use of cannabis here, and really just shedding some light for folks who are wondering what to do. You know, perhaps it's something, you know, they've been dabbling in for a bit and haven't quite found the solution. So here we are, sharing some info for folks. Plus, for nurses, we got to give those nurses some love and sharing it there. So thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate this too.
Hey, fellow health junkie, thanks for listening to the Health Fix podcast. If you enjoyed tuning in, please help support me to get the word out about the podcast. Subscribe, rate, and review, and just get that word out. Thanks again for listening.